than any guard. I imagined they could have taken down double the amount of Kraven I had with a bow. And just like Hawk had said, they had a higher likelihood of surviving an attack.
What do you think would have happened if the Kraven had crested the rise?
Tierman lowered his hands.
Many of you were born within these walls and have never experienced the horror of a Kraven attack. Some of you know, though. You come from cities less guarded or were attacked on the roads. You know what would have happened if only a handful had made it past our guards. If the gods had turned their backs on the people of Solus, it would have been the wholesale slaughter of hundreds. Your wives, your children, yourselves. Many of you would not be standing here.
He paused, and the crowd swelled. It happened again. I felt my senses stretch out from me, and that wasn't too surprising. With a crowd like this, it was hard to keep myself locked down. But I didn't just feel pain. Something touched the back of my throat, reminding me of what I'd felt in the atrium with Lauren. Terror. I felt terror swelling and rising, coming from so many different directions as my gaze skittered from face to face. Another sensation reached me. It was hot and acidic. It wasn't physical pain. It was anger. My heart started thumping. I wasn't feeling pain, but I had to be feeling something. It didn't make sense, but I could sense it pressing against my skin like a hot iron. My throat dried as I swallowed hard. People clasped their hands under their chins and prayed to the gods. I took a small step back. Others stared, their expressions hard. Victor's hand touched my shoulder as he murmured, "Are you all right?"
"Yes? No?" I wasn't sure. Anxiety-spiked adrenaline flooded my system as icy ghost fingers danced along the back of my neck. Pressure clamped down on my chest. I wanted to run. I needed to get as far away from people as I could. But I couldn't. Closing my eyes, I focused on my breathing as I struggled to rebuild my mental walls. I kept breathing, in and out, as deeply and slowly as I could.
"And if you're lucky, they'll go for your throat, and it will be a quick death,"
the Duke was saying.
"Most of you will not be so fortunate. They'll tear into your flesh and tissue, feasting on your blood while you scream for the gods you've lost faith in."
"This is perhaps the least calming speech ever given after an attack,"
Hawk muttered under his breath. His comment jarred me out of my spiral of panic, the utter dryness of his words cutting the cord that connected me to the people. My senses reeled back, and it was like a door slamming shut, locking. I felt nothing but my pounding heart and the sheen of sweat on my forehead. What he had done did more than loosen the hold the public sphere had on me. It not only created a crack in its grip, it obliterated it. The feelings had vanished so quickly that I almost wondered if I had felt them at all. If it had just been my mind playing tricks on me as the faces before me became clear once more, a continuous onslaught of different shades of fear and panic. My gaze sharpened as I took another look at the crowd, focusing on the faces that showed no emotion. Unnerved by their blank features, a trickle of unease curled its way down my spine. I focused on one of the men. He was younger, blonde hair falling to his shoulders. He was too far away to make out his eye color, but he stared up at the Duke and Duchess, lips pressed firmly together. Jaw a hard, broad line, while those who stood around him exchanged looks of terror. I recognized him. He'd been at the city council. He'd had that same expression then, and that thing had happened. The weird flood of sensations I shouldn't be able to feel. Or I didn't know I could. I checked out the crowd once more, easily picking up on the ones like him. There were at least a dozen that I could see.
My gaze slid back to the blonde man as I thought about what I'd felt when I'd been with Lauren. What I'd felt from her made sense now, given what had occurred. She'd been excited about the possibility of the Dark One being nearby, as disturbing as that was. And she would have reason to fear that I would say something. This man may not show emotion in his features, but if he hadn't agreed with what was being done to the Tulis family, it would have come as no surprise that he'd feel anger now. Maybe it was all in my head. Perhaps something was happening to my gift. Was it possibly evolving so I could feel other emotions besides pain? I didn't know, and I needed to find out. But I had to say something now just in case. I turned my head to the right, toward Victor. "Do you see him?" I whispered, describing the blonde man. "Yes." Victor stepped closer. "There are others like him." I faced the audience.
"I see them," he said. "Be alert, Hawk. There may be trouble."
Hawk cut him off.
"I've been tracking the blonde for 20 minutes. He's slowly working his way to the front. Three more have also inched closer."
My brows rose. He was so very observant. "Are we safe?" Tawny asked, keeping her attention focused on the crowd.
"Always,"
Hawk murmured. I nodded when her gaze briefly met mine, hoping she was reassured. My hand brushed my thigh. My dagger was sheathed under the white floor-length tunic. The feel of the bone handle helped to ease whatever panic lingered. The Duke was still mesmerizing the crowd with tales of gore and horror, while I kept my focus on the blonde man. He wore a dark cloak over his broad shoulders, and any number of weapons could be hidden underneath. I knew that from personal experience.
"But we have spoken to the gods on your behalf," the Duchess's voice rang out. "We have told them that the people of Solis, especially those who live in Macedonia, are worthy. They haven't given up on you. We made sure of that."
Cheers rang out, the mood of the crowd shifting rapidly, but the blonde man still showed no reaction.
"And we will honor their faith in the people of Solis by not shielding those you suspect of supporting the Dark One, who seek nothing but destruction and death," she said. "You will be rewarded greatly in this life and in the one beyond. That we can promise you."
There was another round of cheers, and then someone yelled out, "We will honor them during the rite."
"We will," the Duchess cried out, pushing back from the ledge. "What better way to show the gods our gratitude than to celebrate the rite?"
His and her grace stepped back from the balcony then, side by side, almost touching but not quite, as they both lifted their hands on opposite sides of the bodies and began to wave.
"Lies!"
a voice shouted from the crowd. It was the blonde man.
"Liars!"
Time seemed to stop. Everyone froze.
"You do nothing to protect us while you hide in your castles behind your guards. You do nothing but steal children in the name of false gods," he yelled. "Where are the third and fourth sons and daughters? Where are they really?"
Then there was a sound, a sharp intake of breath that came from everywhere, both inside and outside of me. The blonde man's cloak parted as he yanked out his hand. There was a shout, a scream of warning from below. A guard astride a horse turned, but he wasn't fast enough. The blonde man cocked back his arm and,
"Seize him,"
shouted Commander Jansen. The man threw something. It wasn't a dagger or a rock. It was too oddly shaped for that, as it ripped through the air, headed straight toward the Duke of Macedonia. He moved incredibly fast, becoming almost nothing but a blur as Victor shouldered me back. Hawk's arm folded around my waist, and he hauled me against him as the object flew past us, smacking into the wall. It thumped off the ground, and my gaze lowered to where it came to rest. It was a hand. Victor knelt, picking it up and rising, the line of his mouth tense.
"What in the name of the gods?"
he murmured. But it wasn't just any hand. It was the clawed, grayish hand of a craven. I looked at the blonde man. A royal guard had him on his knees, arms twisted behind his back. Blood smeared his mouth.
"From blood and ash,"
he yelled, even as the guard gripped the back of his head.
"We will rise! From blood and ash, we will rise!"
Over and over he screamed the words, as even the guards dragged him through the crowd. The Duke turned back to the crowd and laughed, the sound cold and dry.
"And just like that, the gods have revealed at least one of you, haven't they?"
Chapter 19. Hawk quickly ushered Tawny and me back inside the castle, while Victor moved to talk to the commander. "Where in the world did that man get a craven's hand?" Tawny asked, the skin around her mouth tight as we walked past the great hall and under the banners.
"He could have been outside the rise and cut it off one of those who was killed last night,"
Hawk answered. Tawny placed her hand to her chest. "I really have no words for that." Neither did I, but the appendage might have been from a cursed who'd turned inside the rise. I kept that to myself as we passed several servants. I can't believe he said what he did about the children, the third and fourth sons and daughters.
"Neither can I," Tawny said.
What a terrible thing to claim. Those children, many who were adults by now, were in the temples, serving the gods. While I didn't agree with there being no exceptions, insinuating that they were being stolen as if done for nefarious purposes was outrageous. There only needed to be a few words spoken for them to behave like an infection, tainting a person's mind. I didn't even want to imagine what the parents of those children were now thinking.
"I wouldn't be surprised if more people thought along those same lines,"
Hawk commented, and both Tawny and my heads swiveled in his direction. He walked beside me, only a step behind. He raised his brows.
"None of those children have been seen."
"They've been seen by the priests and priestesses and the ascended,"
Tawny corrected.
"But not by family."
His gaze flickered over the statues as we headed toward the stairs.
"Perhaps if people could see their children every so often, beliefs like that could easily be dismissed, fears allayed."
He had a point, but no one should make claims like that without any evidence, I argued. All it does is cause unnecessary worry and panic. Panic that the dissenters have created and then will exploit.
"Agreed." He glanced down. "Watch your step. Wouldn't want you to continue with your new habit, princess."
"Tripping once isn't a habit," I shot back. "And if you agree, then why would you say you wouldn't be surprised if more felt the same way?"
"Because agreeing doesn't mean I don't understand why some would think that,"
he answered, and I snapped my mouth shut.
"If the Ascended are truly concerned about those claims being believed, all they need to do is allow the children to be seen. I can't imagine that would interfere too badly with their servitude to the gods."
"No, I didn't think that would." Glancing at Tawny, I saw her staring at Hawk as we strode down the second floor hall, headed toward the older portion of the castle. "What do you think?" I asked. Tawny blinked as she looked over at me. "I think you're both saying the same thing." A half-grin formed on Hawk's face, and I didn't say anything as we climbed up the staircase. Hawk stopped us near Tawny's door.
If you don't mind, I need to speak to Penelope in private for a moment. My brows lifted behind the veil, while Tawny sent a poorly concealed glance between us as the corners of her lips tilted up. She then waited for me to signal whether it was fine or not.
It's fine, I told her.
Tawny nodded and then opened her door, stopping long enough to say,
If you need me, knock.
She paused.
Princess.
I groaned. Hawk chuckled.
I really do like her.
I'm sure she'd love to hear that. Would you love to hear that I really like you? He asked. My heart skipped a beat, but I ignored the stupid organ.
Would you be sad if I said no?
I'd be devastated.
I snorted. I'm sure.
We reached my door.
What did you need to talk about?
He motioned to the room, and figuring what he had to say was something he didn't want overheard, I went to open the door.
I should enter first, Princess.
He easily sidestepped me.
Why?
I frowned at his back.
Do you think someone could be waiting for me?
If the Dark One came for you once, he'll come for you again.
A chill danced down my spine as Hawk entered the room. Two oil lamps had been left burning by the door and bed, and wood had been added to the fireplace, casting the room in a soft, warm glow. I didn't stare too long at the bed, which meant that I somehow ended up staring at Hawk's broad back as he scanned the room. The edges of his hair brushed the collar of his tunic, and those strands looked so soft. I hadn't touched them that night at the Red Pearl, and I wished I had.
I needed help. Is it okay for me to enter?
I asked, clasping my hands together. Or should I wait out here while you inspect under the bed for stray dust bunnies? Hawk looked over his shoulder.
It's not dust bunnies I'm worried about. Steps, on the other hand, yes.
Oh my gods.
And the Dark One will keep coming until he has what he wants, he said, looking away.
I shivered.
Your room should always be checked before you enter it.
I folded my arms over my chest, chilled despite the fire. I watched as he circled back to the door, quietly closing it. Hawk faced me, one hand on the hilt of a short sword, and the flipping in my chest doubled. His face was so strikingly pieced together, from the wide set of his lips, the upward slant of his eyebrows, to the shadowy hollows under his high, broad cheekbones. He could have been the muse for the paintings that hung in the city's Athenaeum.
Are you all right?
Hawk asked.
Yes. Why do you ask?
Something appeared to happen to you as the Duke addressed the people.
I made a mental note to remember exactly how observant Hawk was. I started to say that I'd been fine, but I knew he wouldn't believe that. I got a little dizzy. I guess I haven't eaten enough today. His intense gaze tracked over what he could see of my face, and even with the veil, I felt unbearably exposed when he looked at me like he did then.
I hate this.
Hate what?
I asked, confused. Hawk didn't respond immediately.
I hate talking to the veil.
Oh.
Understanding rippled through me as I reached up and touched the length that hid my hair. I imagine most people don't enjoy it.
I can't imagine you do.
I don't, I admitted, and then glanced around the room as if I expected Priestess Analia to be hiding somewhere. I mean, I'd prefer if people were able to see me. He tilted his head to the side.
What does it feel like?
Air hitched in my throat. No one had ever asked me that before. And while I had thought a lot of thoughts and feelings about the veil, I wasn't sure how to put them into words, even though I trusted Hawk. Some things, once spoken, were given a life of their own. I walked to one of the chairs and sat on the edge as I tried to figure out what to say. Suddenly, my brain sort of spit out the only thing that came to mind. It feels suffocating. Hawk drew closer.
Then why do you wear it?
I didn't realize I had a choice. I looked up at him.
You have a choice now.
He knelt in front of me.
It's just you and me, walls and a pathetically inadequate supply of furniture.
My lips twitched. Do you wear your veil when you're with Tawny? He asked. I shook my head, no.
Then why are you wearing it now?
Because I'm allowed to be without my veil with her.
I was told that you were supposed to be veiled at all times, even with those approved to see you.
He was, of course, correct. Hawk arched a brow. I sighed. I don't wear my veil when I'm in my room, and I don't expect anyone to come in other than Tawny. And I don't wear it then because I feel more in control. I can make
the choice not to wear it,
he finished for me. Nodding, I was more than a little stunned that he'd nailed it.
You have a choice now.
I do. But it was hard to explain that the veil also served as a barrier. With it, I remembered what I was and the importance of that. Without it, well, it was easy to want, to simply want. His gaze searched the veil, and a long moment passed. Then he nodded and rose slowly.
I'll be outside if you need anything.
A strange lump formed in my throat, making it impossible for me to speak. I remained where I was as he left the room, staring at the closed door once he was gone. I didn't move. I didn't remove the veil. Not for a long time. Not until I no longer wanted. The following evening, I stood outside the Duchess's receiving room on the second floor. It was at the opposite end of the hall from the Duke's, and I kept my back to his room. I didn't want to see it, let alone think about it. Two royal guards stood outside Jacinda's room, while Victor waited beside me. I'd told him that morning what had really happened during the Duchess's and Duke's address to the people, and how I wasn't sure if I had actually felt something or not. He suggested that I speak with the Duchess, since the priestess was unlikely to give me any useful information, and the Duchess, depending on her mood, was more likely to speak openly. I just hoped she was in a talkative mood. Neither Victor nor I spoke in the presence of the other royal guards, but I knew he was concerned over what I shared, about what it could mean if my gift was evolving, or if it was my mind.
It could just be the stress of everything that's happened, he'd said. It may be better to wait until you're sure it is your gift before alerting anyone.
I knew Victor worried that if it was my mind, that it would somehow be held against me. But I didn't want to wait until it happened again. I'd rather know now if it was my gift or not, so I could react better. The door opened, and one of the royal guards stepped out.
Her Grace will see you now.
Victor remained outside as planned, since knowledge of my gift was supposed to be limited to the Duke and Duchess and the temple clergy. I broke so many rules. It was no wonder that Hawk had seemed surprised when I wouldn't remove my veil the night before. That's what I was thinking as I walked into the receiving room. I filed those thoughts away as I looked around. I'd always liked this room with its ivory walls and light gray furnishings. There was something peaceful about it, and it was also warm and inviting despite there being no windows. It had to be all the dazzling chandeliers. My gaze found the Duchess seated at a small circular table where she was drinking from a small cup. Garbed in a gown of the palest yellow, she reminded me of spring in the capital. She looked up, a slight smile on her ageless face. Come, have a seat. Walking forward, I took the chair across from her, noting the plate of pastries. All that was left were the items with nuts. The chocolate scones were probably the first to be devoured. The Duchess had the same weakness as Victor.
You wished to speak with me?
She placed the delicate flowery cup on its matching saucer. I nodded. Yes, I know you're very busy, but I was hoping you'd be able to help me with something. Her head inclined, sending soft russet-colored waves tumbling over her shoulder.
I must admit, you have me curious. I cannot remember the last time you came to me for assistance.
I could. It was when I'd asked for my chambers to be moved to the older part of the castle, something I was sure she still didn't quite understand. I wanted to talk to you. I drew in a deep breath. I wanted to talk to you about my gift. There was a slight widening of her pitch-black eyes.
I was not expecting that to be a topic. Has someone discovered your gift?
No, Your Grace. That's not at all what has happened. Picking up the napkin from her lap, she wiped her fingers.
What then? Please, do not keep me in suspense.
I think something is happening with it, I told her. There have been a few situations where I believe I felt something other than pain. Slowly, she placed the napkin on the table.
You were using your gift.
You know the gods have forbidden you to do so. Not until you have been found worthy of such a gift are you to use it. I know I haven't, I lied easily, probably a little too easily. But sometimes it just happens. When I'm in a large crowd, I have trouble controlling it.
Has this been discussed with the priestess?
Good gods, no. It doesn't happen often, I swear, and it has only happened recently. I will double my efforts to control it. But when it happened earlier, I think I felt something other than pain. The Duchess stared at me, unblinking, for what felt like a small eternity. And then she rose from her seat. A little unnerved, I watched her go to the white cabinet against the wall.
What do you think you felt?
Anger, I answered. During the city council and last night, I felt anger. I wouldn't speak of Lauren. I wouldn't do that to her. It was that man who...
The dissenter.
Yes, at least I think so, I amended. I think I was feeling anger from him. She poured a drink from a decanter.
Have you felt anything else that seems abnormal to you?
I think I've felt fear, too. When the Duke was speaking about the Craven attack. Terror is very similar to pain, but it feels different, and I thought that I might have felt something like, I don't know, excitement or anticipation? I frowned. Those two things are kind of the same thing, I suppose. In a way,
do you feel anything now?
She turned to me, a glass of what I thought might be sherry in her hand. I blinked from behind the veil. You want me to use my gift on you? She nodded.
I thought, it doesn't matter what you thought, she interrupted,
and I stiffened.
I want you to use your gift now and tell me what, if anything, you feel.
Despite finding her request more than strange, I did what she requested. I opened my senses, felt the cords stretch out between us, and connect with nothing but vast emptiness. A shiver danced over my skin.
Do you feel anything, Penelope?
Closing down the connection, I shook my head. I don't feel anything, Your Grace. The Duchess exhaled sharply through her nostrils. Then she downed her drink in one impressive gulp. My eyes widened as my mind rapidly processed her reaction. It was almost as if she expected me to feel something from her. But I'd never been able to. I didn't think I ever would be able to.
Good,
she breathed, her skirts swishing around her ankles as she turned back to the cabinet, placing the glass down. I was wondering if I was truly feeling something or... I trailed off as she faced me.
I believe your gift is maturing, she said, coming toward me,
the bright light above her glittering off the obsidian ring on her finger as she gripped the back of the chair.
It would make sense that it would be happening as you're nearing your ascension.
So this is normal. She clucked her tongue off the roof of her mouth. For a moment, it appeared as if she were about to say something, but then she changed her mind.
Yes, I do believe so, but I would not speak to His Grace about this.
Tension crept into my shoulders at the thinly veiled warning. I was never sure if the Duchess knew about her husband's predilections. I couldn't imagine how she could be completely blind to them, but there was a part of me that hoped she was. Because if she knew and did nothing to stop him, did it make her any better? Or was I even being fair to her? Just because she was an ascended didn't mean she held power over her husband.
It would remind him of the first maiden, she whispered.
Shocked, I stared up at her. I had not been expecting her to bring up the first maiden, the one before me, the only other maiden I knew of. Did this happen with the previous maiden?
It did.
Her knuckles started to turn white, and I nodded. There had only been two maidens chosen by the gods.
What do you know about the first maiden?
Nothing, I admitted. I don't know her name or even when she lived, or what happened to her upon her ascension, or why it mattered whether or not my developing gift reminded the Duke of her.
There is a reason for that.
There was? Priestess Analia had never told me anything. She'd ignored any questions about her or my ascension.
We do not speak of the first maiden, Penelope, she said. It's not that we simply choose not to. It is that we cannot.
The gods forbade it? I suspected. She nodded as her stare seemed to penetrate my veil.
I will break the rule just once and pray that the gods forgive me. But I will tell you this in hopes that your future does not end the same as the first maidens did.
I had a really bad feeling about where this was going.
We do not speak of her, ever. Her name is not worthy of our lips, nor the air we breathe. If it were possible, I'd have her name and her history scrubbed in its entirety.
The chair cracked under Duchess Tierman's hand, startling me. My heart nearly stopped in my chest.
Was she found unworthy by the gods? By some small miracle, she wasn't. But that doesn't mean she was worthy.
If she hadn't been found unworthy, then why was she never spoken about? Surely she couldn't have been that bad if she hadn't been found unworthy.
In the end, her worthiness didn't matter.
Duchess Tierman lifted her fingers. The chair was warped, splintered.
Her actions put her on a path that ended with her death. The Dark One killed her.
Chapter 20. After years of destruction that had decimated entire cities, leaving countrysides and villages in ruins and ending hundreds of thousands of lives, the world was on the brink of chaos when, on the eve of the Battle of Broken Bones, Jalara Solis of Vodina Isles gathered his forces outside the city of Pompeii, the last Atlantean stronghold. I cleared my throat, wildly uncomfortable. Not only was that the longest sentence in the history of man, I always hated reading aloud, but especially when I had Hawk as an audience. I hadn't looked at him since I'd started reading. Still, I was almost positive
that he was doing everything in his power to remain alert and not be bored into falling asleep while standing,
which sat at the foot of the Skotos Mountains.
Skotos,
Princess Analia interrupted.
It's pronounced like Scotus. You know how it's pronounced, maiden. Do so correctly.
My fingers tightened around the leather binding. The history of the War of Two Kings and the Kingdom of Solus was well over 1,000 pages, and every week I was forced to read several chapters during my sessions with the priestess. I'd probably read the entire tome aloud over 12 times, and I swore that each time the priestess changed the way Skotos was pronounced. I didn't say that. Instead, I took a deep, long breath and tried to ignore the almost overwhelming urge to throw the book at her face. It would do some damage, probably break her nose. The image of her clasping her bloodied face brought forth a disturbing amount of glee. I smothered a yawn as I concentrated on the text. Having been up most of the night thinking about what the Duchess had told me, I'd gotten little sleep. And like I told Victor, I'd gotten few answers. But it had been a relief to learn that what was happening wasn't something that my mind was conjuring up. My abilities were maturing, whatever that meant. The Duchess hadn't wanted to discuss it further. So while I knew that what was happening was somewhat normal, I was also left with the knowledge that the First Maiden had done something that had put her on a path to interact with the Dark One, who'd killed her. That wasn't exactly reassuring. Neither was the knowledge that the First Maiden was somehow connected to the Duke. Was that why he treated me as he did? Perhaps it had nothing to do with my mother. I drew in a shallow breath. Which sat at the foot of the Skotos Mountains.
It's actually pronounced Skotos,
came the interruption from the corner of the room. My eyes widened behind the veil as I looked over to Hawk. His face was all but devoid of expression. I glanced at the priestess, who sat across from me on an equally hard, cushionless wooden stool. I had no idea how old the priestess was. Her face was bare of makeup and smooth, but I thought that she might be at the end of her third decade of life. There were no gray strands in her brown hair that was sharply pulled back and held in a bun at the nape of her neck, causing her face to remind me of the hawks that I sometimes saw perched up high in the Queen's gardens. A shapeless red gown covered her from just under her neck, leaving only her hands visible. I'd never seen the woman smile. And she was definitely not smiling now as she looked over her shoulder at Hawk.
And how would you know?
Derision dripped from her tone like acid.
My family originates from the farmlands not too far from Pompeii, before the area was destroyed and became the wastelands we know today, he explained. My family and others from that area have always pronounced the mountain range as the maiden first said.
He paused.
The language and accent of those from the far west can be difficult for some to master. The maiden, however, appears not to fall into that group.
I was confident that my eyes were about to pop out of my face in response to the obvious insult. I bit down on my lip to stop myself from grinning. Priestess Analia's already stiff shoulders jerked back as she stared at Hawk. I could practically see the steam coming out of her ears.
I did not realize I had asked for your thoughts.
She spoke, tone as withering as her stare.
My apologies.
He bowed his head in submission. But it was the poorest attempt at it, because his amber eyes all but danced with amusement. She nodded.
Apology? I just didn't want the maiden to sound uneducated if any discussion were to arise around the Skotos Mountains,
he tacked on. Oh, my gods.
But I will remain quiet from here on out, Hawk said,
Please, continue, maiden. You have such a lovely reading voice that even I find myself enthralled with the history of Solus.
I wanted to laugh.
It was building in my throat, threatening to burst free, but I couldn't let it. My grip loosened on the edges of the book,
which sat at the foot of the Skotos Mountains. The gods had finally chosen a side. When the princess said nothing, I continued. Nyctos, the king of the gods, and his son Theon, the god of war, appeared before Jalara and his army. Having grown distrustful of the Atlantean people and their unnatural thirst for blood and power, they sought to aid in ending the cruelty and oppression that had reaped these lands under the rule of Atlantia. I took a breath. Jalara Solus and his army were brave, but Nyctos, in his wisdom, saw that they could not defeat the Atlanteans, who had risen to godlike strength through the bloodletting of innocents.
They killed hundreds of thousands over the time of their reign. Bloodletting is a gentle description of what they actually did. They bit people,
Princess Analia elaborated, and when I looked up at her, there was a strange gleam to her dark brown eyes.
Drank their blood and became drunk with power, with strength and near immortality, and those they didn't kill became the pestilence we now know as the Kraven. That is who our beloved king and queen bravely took a stance against and were prepared to die to overthrow.
I nodded. Her fingers were turning pink from how tightly she'd balled her hands where they rested in her lap. Continue. I didn't dare look at Hawk. Unwilling to see the failure of Jalara of Vodina Isles, Nyctos gave the god's first blessing, sharing with Jalara and his army the blood of the gods. I shuddered. That was also another gentle term for drinking the blood of the gods. Emboldened with the strength and power, Jalara of Vodina Isles and his army were able to defeat the Atlanteans during the Battle of Broken Bones, therefore ending the reign of the corrupt and wretched kingdom. I started to turn the page, knowing the next chapter dealt with the ascension of the queen and the building of the first rise.
Why? The priestess demanded.
Confused, I looked over at her.
Why what? Why did you just shudder when you read the part about the blessing?
I hadn't realized my action had been so noticeable.
I didn't know what to say that wouldn't irritate the priestess and end with her running back to the Duke. You seemed disturbed, she pointed out, her tone softening. I knew better than to trust that. What is it about the blessing that would affect you so?
I'm not disturbed. The blessing is an honor.
But you shuddered, she persisted. Unless you find the act of the blessing pleasurable, am I not to assume that it disturbs you?
Pleasurable? My face flamed red hot, and I was grateful for the veil. It's just that the blessing seems to be similar to how the Atlanteans became so powerful. They drank the blood of the innocent, and the ascended drink the blood of the gods.
How dare you compare the ascension to what the Atlanteans have done?
The priestess moved quickly, leaning forward and gripping my chin between her fingers.
It is not the same thing. Perhaps you've grown fond of the cane, and you purposely strive to disappoint not only me, but also the Duke.
The moment her skin touched mine, I locked down my senses. I didn't want to know if she felt pain or anything else.
I didn't say that it was, I said, seeing Hawk step forward.
I swallowed.
Just that it reminded me of the fact that you think of those two things in the same thought greatly concerns me, maiden. The Atlanteans took what was not given, During the ascension, the blood is offered freely by the gods. Her grip tightened, bordering on painful, and my gift stretched against my skin, almost as if it wanted to be used. That is not something that I should have to explain to the future of the kingdom, to the legacy of the ascended.
For as long as I could remember, everyone said that, even Victor, and it grated on my nerves and sat like a boulder on my shoulders. The future of the entire kingdom rests on me being given to the gods upon my 19th birthday?
Her already thin lips became almost non-existent.
What would happen if I didn't ascend? I demanded, thinking of the first maiden. It hadn't sounded like she'd ascended, and everyone was still here. How would that stop the others from ascending? Would the gods refuse to give their blood so freely?
I sucked in a sharp gasp as the priestess cocked her hand back. It wouldn't be the first time she had smacked me. But this time the stinging blow didn't land. Hawk had moved so fast that I hadn't seen him leave the corner. But now he had the priestess's wrist in his grasp.
Remove your fingers from the maiden's chin. Now.
Priestess Analia's eyes had grown wide as she stared up at Hawk.
How dare you touch me?
How dare you lay a single finger on the maiden?
His jaw flexed as he glared down at the woman.
Perhaps I was not clear enough for you. Remove your hand from the maiden, or I will act upon your attempt to harm her. And I can assure you, me touching you will be the least of your concerns.
I might have stopped breathing as I watched them. No one had ever intervened during one of the priestess's tirades.
Tawny couldn't. If she did, she would face worse, and I'd never expect nor want that.
Rylan had often turned in the other direction, as did Hannes. Even Victor had never been so bold. He'd usually find a way to interrupt, to stop the situation from escalating. But I'd been slapped on more than one occasion in front of him, and there was nothing he could do. But Hawk now stood between us, clearly prepared to follow through on his threat. And while I knew I would most likely pay for this later, as would he, I wanted to jump up and hug him. Not because he had protected me. I'd been slapped harder by stray branches while walking through Wisher's Grove. There was a far pettier reason. Seeing the priestess's usual smugness vanish under the weight of shock and witnessing the way her mouth hung open and how her cheeks mottled with red was almost as satisfying as throwing the book in her face. Vibrating with rage, she let go of my chin, and I leaned back. Hawk released her wrist, but he remained there. Her chest rose and fell under the gown as she placed both hands flat on her legs. She turned her head to me.
The mere fact that you would even speak such a thing shows that you have no respect for the honor bestowed upon you. But when you go to the gods, you'll be treated with as much respect as you have shown today.
What does that mean? I asked.
This session is over,
she answered instead, rising from her seat.
I have too much to do with the rite only 2 days away. I have no time to spend with someone as unworthy as you.
I saw Hawk's eyes narrow, and I stood, placing the book on the stool as I spoke before Hawk could.
I'm ready to return to my chambers, I said to him, and then nodded at the priestess.
Good day. She didn't respond, and I started for the door, relieved when Hawk fell into step behind me. I waited until we were halfway across the banquet hall before speaking.
You shouldn't have done that, I told him.
I should have allowed her to hit you?
In what world would that have been acceptable?
In a world where you end up punished for something that wouldn't even have hurt.
I don't care if she hits like a baby mouse.
This world is fucked up if anyone finds that acceptable.
eyes widening, I stopped and looked at him. His eyes were like shards of amber, his jaw just as hard. Is it worth losing your position over and being ostracized for? He glared down at me. If you even have to ask that question, then you don't know me at all.
I hardly know you at all, I whispered, irritated by the sting his words left behind.
Well, now you know that I will never stand by and watch someone hit you or any person for no reason other than they feel they can, he shot back.
I started to tell him that he was being ridiculous and was missing the point. But he wasn't being ridiculous. This world we lived in was messed up, and the gods knew that it wasn't the first time I'd thought that. But it had never hit me with such clarity before.
Silent, I turned from him and started walking. He was right beside me. Several moments passed. It's not like I'm okay with how she treats me. It took everything in me not to throw the book at her. I wish you had.
I almost laughed. If I had, she would have reported me.
She'll probably report you.
To the Duke? Let her.
He shrugged. I can't imagine that he's okay with her striking the maiden.
I snorted.
You don't know the Duke.
What do you mean?
He would probably applaud her, I said. They share a lack of control when it comes to their tempers.
He's hit you? Hawk stated. Is that what she meant when she said that you'd grown fond of the cane?
He grabbed my arm, turning me to face him.
Has he used a cane on you?
The disbelief and anger filling those golden eyes sent a wave of nausea through me. Oh, gods. Realizing what I'd basically just admitted, I felt the blood drain from my face and then rapidly flood back in. I pulled my arm and he let go.
I didn't say that.
He was staring straight ahead, his jaw flexing.
What were you saying?
Just that the Duke is more likely to punish you than he is the priestess. I have no idea what she meant by the cane, I continued in a rush. She sometimes says things that make no sense.
Hawk glanced down at me, his lashes lowered.
I must have misread what you said then.
I nodded, relieved. Yes, I just don't want you to get into trouble.
And what about you?
I'll be fine, I was quick to say, as I started walking again, aware of the darting glances passing servants sent our way. The Duke will just give me a lecture and make it a lesson. But you would face...
I'll face nothing, he said.
And I wasn't so sure about that.
Is she always like that?
I sighed. Yes.
The priestess seems like a...
He paused, and I glanced over at him. His lips were pursed.
A bitch. I don't say that often, but I say it now, proudly.
Nearly choking on my laugh, I looked away.
She is something, and she's always disappointed in my commitment to being the maiden.
Exactly how are you supposed to prove you are?
He asked.
Better yet, what are you supposed to be committed to?
I almost jumped on him in that moment and wrapped my arms around him.
I didn't because it would be grossly inappropriate.
Instead, I gave him a sedate nod. I'm not quite sure. It's not like I'm trying to run away or escape my ascension.
Would you?
Funny question, I muttered, my heart still thumping from what I'd almost exposed.
It was a serious one.
My heart lurched in my chest as I stopped in the narrow, short hall and approached one of the windows that faced the courtyard. I stared up at Hawk, and everything about him said that it was, in fact, a genuine inquiry. I can't believe you'd ask that.
Why?
He came to stand behind me.
Because
I couldn't do that, I told him. I wouldn't.
It seems to me that this honor that has been bestowed upon you comes with very few benefits.
You're not allowed to show your face or travel anywhere outside the castle grounds. You didn't even seem all that surprised when the priestess moved to strike you.
That leads me to believe it's something fairly common, he said, his brows dark slashes above his eyes. You are not allowed to speak to most, and you are not to be spoken to. You are caged in your room most of the day, your freedom restricted. All the rights others have are privileges for you, rewards that seem impossible for you to earn.
I opened my mouth, but I didn't know what to say. He'd pointed out all that I didn't have and made it so painfully clear. I looked away.
So, I wouldn't be surprised if you did try to escape this honor, he finished.
Would you stop me if I did? I asked.
Would Victor?
I frowned, not even sure I wanted to know why he'd asked that. But I answered honestly anyway. I know Victor cares about me. He's like I imagine my father would have been if he were still alive. And I'm like Victor's daughter, who never got to take a breath. But he would stop me.
Hawk said nothing.
So would you? I repeated.
I think I would be too curious to find out exactly how you planned to escape, to stop you.
I coughed out a short laugh. You know, I actually believe that.
Will she report you to the Duke?
He asked after a moment. Pressure settled on my chest as I looked at him. He was staring out the window. Why would you ask?
Will she?
He asked instead. Probably not, I said, lying all too easily. The priestess probably went straight to the Duke. She's probably so busy with the rite. Everyone is. As the Duke would be. So I might get lucky and at least have a delay between now and when I would inevitably be summoned. Hopefully that meant that Hawk would also get lucky. If he were removed from his post, it was unlikely that I would ever see him again. The sadness that thought brought forth meant it was far past time to change the subject. I've never been to a rite.
And you've never snuck into one?
I dipped my chin. I'm offended that you would even suggest such a thing.
He chuckled. How bizarre that I could think that you, who has a history of misbehaving, would do such a thing.
I grinned at that.
You haven't missed much. To be honest, there's a lot of talking, a bunch of tears, and too much drinking.
His gaze slid to mine.
It's after the rite when things can get interesting. You know how it is.
I don't know, I reminded him, even though I had an idea of what he spoke of. Tawny had told me that once the ritual of the rite was completed, and the mistresses and stewards took the new ladies and lords in wait, and the priests left with the third daughters and sons, the celebration changed. It became more frantic and raw.
Or at least that was what I'd interpreted from Tawny.
But it seemed too bizarre to imagine the Ascended being involved in anything like that. They were always so
cold. But you know how easy it is to be yourself when you wear a mask.
His voice was low as his gaze held mine. How anything you want becomes achievable when you can pretend that no one knows who you are. Warmth infused my cheeks. Yes, I did know that. And how kind of him to remind me. You shouldn't bring that up. His head tilted.
No one is close enough to overhear.
That doesn't matter. We shouldn't talk about that.
Ever?
I started to say yes, but something stopped me. I pulled my gaze from his.
Outside the window, the violet-hued butterfly bushes stirred softly in the breeze. Hawk was quiet for several moments before asking,
"Would you like to go back to your room?"
he asked. I shook my head. "Not particularly."
"Would you like to go out there instead?"
"You think it would be safe?"
"Between you and me, I would think so."
The corners of my lips lifted. I liked that he'd included me, acknowledging that I could hold my own. I used to love the courtyard. It was the one place where, I don't know, my mind was quiet, and I could just be. I didn't think or worry about anything. I found it so very peaceful.
"But not anymore?"
"No," I whispered. "Not anymore. It's strange how no one speaks of Rylan or Melissa. It's almost as if they never existed."
"Sometimes remembering those who died means facing your own mortality," he said.
"Do you think the Ascended are uncomfortable with the idea of death?"
"Even them?"
he answered.
"They may be godlike, but they can be killed. They can die."
Neither of us spoke for several minutes as servants and others passed behind us. Several ladies in wait had stopped and pretended to take in the view of the garden while talking about the rite. But I knew they were lingering near where we stood, not because of the stunning flowers and lush greenery, or because it was so rare for me to be seen, but because of the beautiful man who stood beside me. He seemed unaware of them, and even though I kept my gaze forward, I could feel his stare every couple of moments. Eventually, one of the mistresses came along, shooing the ladies away, and we were left alone once more.
"Are you excited about attending the rite?"
"I'm curious," I admitted. The rite was only 2 days away.
"I'm curious to see you."
My lips parted on a soft inhale. I didn't dare look at him. If I did, I feared I'd do something incredibly stupid. Something that the first maiden could have done that had made the Duchess feel that she was unworthy.
"You'll be unveiled."
"Yes. I also wouldn't be expected to wear the color white. It would almost be like going to the Red Pearl, because I would be able to blend in, and no one would know who I was, what I was. But I will be masked."
"I prefer that version of you," he said.
"The masked version of myself?" I asked, guessing that he was thinking of our time at the Red Pearl.
"Honest?"
His voice sounded closer, and when I took another deep breath, the scent of leather and pine surrounded me.
"I prefer the version of you that wears no mask or veil."
I opened my mouth, but as was becoming commonplace where Hawk was concerned, I didn't know what to say. It felt like I should discourage such statements, but those words wouldn't come to the surface either, just as they hadn't before. So I did the only thing I could think of. I changed the subject. "I remember you said your father was a farmer." I cleared my throat. "Do you have any other siblings? Any lords in wait in the family? A sister or..." I rambled on. "There's only Ian for me. I mean, I have only one brother. I'm excited to see him again. I miss him." Hawk was quiet for so long that I had to look to make sure he was still there and still breathing. He was. He stared down at me, his amber eyes cool.
"I had a brother."
"Had?" My senses stretched out, and I didn't even have a chance to control them. I opened myself up, and I locked my legs to stop myself from taking a step back. I didn't feel anything strange, but I felt Hawk's anguish, the bitterly cold pain that pelted my skin. It was sharper. This was where his pain stemmed from. He'd lost a brother. I reacted, without thought to what he would think
or to the fact that we were not alone. It was an uncontrollable urge, as if the gift itself had a hold of me. I touched just his hand with mine and squeezed it in hopes that it would be construed as a gesture of sympathy. "I'm sorry," I said, and I thought of warm beaches and salty air. Those thoughts quickly changed to how I'd felt when Hawk had kissed me. The taut lines of Hawk's expression smoothed out as he stared out the window. He blinked, not once, but twice. Lifting my fingers from his, I clasped my hands together, hoping that he hadn't realized that I'd done something. He stood there, though, as if he'd been struck, immobile. I lifted my brows. "Are you okay?" He blinked again. This time, he laughed softly.
"Yes, it's... I just had the strangest feeling."
"Is that so?" I watched him closely. Hawk nodded as he rubbed the palm of his hand over his chest.
"I don't even know how to explain it."
Now I was starting to worry that I'd somehow done something other than relieve his pain. What, I wasn't sure, but if my gifts were evolving, anything was possible. I reached out with my senses once more, and all I felt in return was warmth. "Is it a bad feeling? Should we find a healer?"
"No, not at all."
Hawk's laugh was stronger then, less uncertain. His eyes, now a warm honey, met mine.
"My brother is not dead, by the way, so no need for sympathy."
Now it was my turn to blink repeatedly. "Oh, I just thought..." I trailed off.
"Are you sure you wouldn't like to visit the garden?"
Thinking it was far past time for me to lock myself away before I did yet another reckless thing, I shook my head. "I think I would like to go back to my room now." He hesitated for a moment, but then nodded. Neither of us spoke as we made our way. Apparently, Hawk was trying to figure out why he felt happier, lighter. And I was left wondering what exactly had happened to his brother to cause that kind of reaction, especially if his brother was still alive. Chapter 21. It took less than 24 hours for me to yet again do something utterly reckless. This time, however, I may end up regretting it. Of all the ways I'd thought I might die, it had never occurred to me that it could happen while borrowing a book from the Athenaeum. There were far more dangerous things I'd done in my 18 years of life, times where I would have been more likely to die in the process, utter heaps of examples where even I had been a bit surprised that I'd walked away with my limbs and life intact. But here I was, one wrong step away from plummeting to my death, clutching the supposed diary of one Miss Willa Collins, the book that Lauren and Daphina had been talking about. Obviously, the book would most definitely be the type of reading material Priestess Analia would expressly forbid. And if I were caught with it in my possession, it would be yet another reason for her to believe that I wasn't respectful of my duty as the maiden. So, of course, I had to read it. I'd been so very bored all day. I'd already read every book Tawny had snuck me at least 3 times, and I couldn't bring myself to read another too familiar page even one more time. She had yet again been commandeered by the Duchess and the Mistress, and I knew I might not even see her the following morning. So, I had another day of staring, uninterrupted except for my training with Victor, at 4 stone walls. And the longer I stayed in my room with nothing to occupy my mind, the more I thought about what Hawk had said, about all the rights that had been stripped away from me. It wasn't like I didn't already know that, but it wasn't something that others appeared to even acknowledge.
Maybe it was because they were with me constantly, and so everything had become the norm. But to Hawk, who was new, none of this was normal. And that was what led me to travel unaccompanied through Wisher's Grove to the Athenaeum, while Hawk stood outside my chamber door, thinking I was inside. Victor was, well, I had no idea where he was. I had a feeling, based on how tired and sad his eyes had looked this morning, that he'd been called upon the night before to take care of one of the cursed, and hadn't invited me. I also had a feeling that he wasn't going to involve me going forward, which irritated me. Of course, I planned to discuss that with him the first chance I got. I wouldn't be cut out when I could help people, and he would just have to deal with it. But right now, I needed to focus on not dying, or worse yet, getting caught. Cold night air whipped around me as I stood plastered against the stone wall, praying to any god that the foot-wide ledge I stood on wouldn't cave under my weight. I doubted, when it was built, that they had taken into consideration that at some point, an entirely stupid maiden would find herself standing on it. How had this gone so terribly wrong? Sneaking into the Athenaeum hadn't been hard. With my shapeless black cloak, my trusty mask in place, and my face hidden under the hood, I doubted anyone on the streets of Macedonia had been able to tell if I was male or female, let alone the maiden, as I hurried down the alley toward the back entrance of the library. Moving along the grid of narrow halls and staircases without being seen was easy, too. I knew how to be like a ghost when needed, quiet and still. The problem started when I found the leather-bound journal of Miss Collins. Instead of leaving and going back to the castle like I knew I should, I'd ducked inside an empty room. I had been going stir-crazy in that room, and I dreaded going back. And the thickly cushioned settees called to me. The stocked liquor cabinet, something I found odd to discover in a library, confused me, however. But I'd sat by the large windows overlooking the city below and cracked open the worn book. My cheeks had been scalded by the end of the first page, having discovered what occurs when someone kisses one, not on the mouth or on the breast like Hawk had done before he knew who I was, but someplace far more intimate. I couldn't stop reading, practically devouring the cream-hued pages. Miss Willa Collins lived a very interesting life with many, many other fascinating people. I had gotten to the part where she spoke of her brief fling with the king, which I could not even begin to picture, nor did I want to, when I heard voices outside the room, one in particular I'd never thought to hear in the Athenaeum. The Duke's. Hearing his voice meant that I'd been so caught up in the diary, I hadn't even realized the sun had set. I hadn't been summoned to meet with him the night before or today. With the preparations for the rite, I'd been given a temporary reprieve, and I also assumed Hawk had as well, since he was still my guard. But the reprieve would come to a swift end if the Duke discovered me, which was why I was now perched on a ledge, outside what turned out to be the Duke's personal room in the Athenaeum. The only grace I'd been given was that the window I'd climbed out of wasn't the one facing the street, but rather one blocked by Wisher's Grove. Only the Hawks could see me, or witness my fall. The sound of ice clinking against ice caused me to swallow a groan. He'd already been in the room for at least 30 minutes, and I was betting that he was on his second glass of whiskey. I had no idea what he was doing. With the rite kicking off in just hours, I imagined he was busy meeting with the new ladies and lords in wait, and the parents who would be giving their third sons